Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 42, Making the Unconscious Conscious, Part 1. In the notes for this episode, you'll find a circular diagram of the human self, and I will be referring to it in this episode. To briefly describe it for those that don't have it available at the moment, the circle is divided into four sections horizontally. At the top is consciousness. The second section is ego. Then below that is personal unconsciousness, the shadow. And below that is the collective unconsciousness, the seat of the soul. Most people live out of the top third of the circle, which is ironically called consciousness. This is what I know, what I think, what I have experienced, what I consider to be me. The ego, shown here as a bold red line, is that part of the self-structure that wants to be significant, central, important, and right. It is highly defended and self-protective by its very nature. The irony and paradox is that if you stay above this line, you are largely unconscious, and not truly conscious at all. The ego wants to eliminate all bothersome, humiliating, or negative information in order to look good at all cost. Jesus calls this self an actor, a word he uses 15 times in Matthew's Gospel. This is usually translated from the Greek as hypocrite. The ego wants to keep you tied to your easy and acceptable levels of knowledge. It encourages you to live only from this conscious self, which, as we said, is really not conscious at all. Therapy, suffering, prayer, and mysticism encourage you to drop into the personal and collective unconscious. The ego does not want you going down into the personal unconscious, or as Carl Jung would call it, your shadow self. The shadow includes all those things about yourself that you don't want to see, are not ready to see, and you don't want others to see. Our tendency is to try to hide or deny this shadow part of ourselves, even and most especially from ourselves. Carl Jung questions, "How can I be substantial if I do not cast a shadow?" End quote. He makes clear that the unconscious is not bad or evil. It is just hidden from us. Jung describes shadow also as the source of the highest good, not only dark, but also light, not only semi-human and demonic, but superhuman, spiritual, and in Jung's words, numinous. So that is why you dare not avoid the deep self. The wild beast and the angels reside in the same wilderness, and it takes the spirit to drive you there. See Mark 1:13. You see why the mystics so emphasize going into the darkness, which can only be done by faith and immense courage? It takes more courage to examine the dark corners of your own soul than it does for a soldier to fight on a battlefield, says William Butler Yeats. The bottom part of the circle is the deep unconscious, or what Jung calls the collective unconscious. There you are connected to everything and experience things in their unity. The collective unconscious holds images that fascinate people in all cultures across times and places. Jung calls these universal truths and symbols that are just waiting to be revealed archetypes or ruling images. Jung believes that when you go deep enough, you will find the numinous, the God archetype, the place where you are complete and whole. This may be what most people think of as the soul. Truly conscious people are in touch with their unconscious, at least to some degree. People who try to remain simply on the conscious level, overly defended by their ego, end up being very superficial and thus even dangerous to themselves and all around them. Denying your shadow self allows you to unknowingly do very selfish and evil things, and even call it virtue. See John 16:2-3. Let us take this moment to connect with the numinous, the God archetype. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Carl Jung writes, "One cannot live the afternoon of life according to the program of life's morning. For what was great in the morning will be of little importance in the evening. And what in the morning was true will at evening become a lie." It was Carl Jung who first popularized the phrase the two halves of life to describe the two major tangents and tasks of any human life. The first half of life is spent building our sense of identity, importance, and security, what I would call the false self, and Freud might call the ego self. Jung emphasizes the importance and value of a healthy ego structure, but inevitably you discover, often through failure or a significant loss, that your conscious self is not all of you, but only the acceptable you. You will find your real purpose and identity at a much deeper level than the positive image you present to the world. In the second half of life, the ego still has a place, but now in the service of the true self, or soul, your inner and inherent identity. Your ego is the container that holds all together, so now its strength is an advantage. Someone who can see their ego in this way is probably what we mean by a grounded person. Carl Jung writes of his own experience, "It was only after the illness that I understood how important it is to affirm one's own destiny. In this way, we forge an ego that does not break down when incomprehensible things happen, an ego that endures the truth, and that is capable of coping with the world and with fate. Then to experience defeat is only to experience victory." End quote. In the second half of life, we discover that it is no longer sufficient to find meaning in being successful or healthy. We need a deeper source of purpose. According to Jung, meaning makes a great many things endurable, perhaps everything. No science will ever replace myth, the communicator of meaning. And a myth cannot be made out of any science. Myth is the revelation of a divine life in man. It is not we who invent myth. Rather, it speaks to us as a word of God. End quote. Science gives us explanations, and that is a good start, but myth and religion give us meaning, which alone satisfies the soul. Jung says that during the second half of life, our various problems are not solved so much by psychotherapy as by authentic religious experience. Jung had a significant influence on Bill Wilson, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thus, Wilson also emphasizes that a vital spiritual experience is the best therapy of all. A vital spiritual experience, according to Wilson, is the foundational healing of addiction, much more than mere recovery, which is just getting you started. In the classical three stages of spiritual life, recovery is itself purgation, but not yet true illumination or divine union. The unitive encounter with a power greater than you resituates the self inside of a safe universe where you don't need to be special, rich, or famous to feel alive. Those questions are resolved once and for all. The hall of mirrors that most people live in becomes unhelpful and even bothersome. Now aliveness comes from the inside out. That is what we mean when we say God saves you. Jung believes we can do damage, therefore, by petrifying our spiritual experience when we try to name it to express God as an abstract idea. Before you explain your encounter with the divine as an idea or a name that then must be defended, proven, or believed, simply stay with the naked experience itself, the numinous, transcendent experience of allurement, longing, and intimacy within you. This is the inner God image breaking through. No idea of God is God of itself, but the experience of God's action in you is what grounds you and breaks you wide open at the same time. Here are a few of our mystics in this regard. Augustine, God is more intimate to me than I am to myself. Meister Eckhart, between God and the soul there is no distance. Catherine of Genoa, my deepest me is God. This is both a transcendent God and my deepest me at the same time. To discover one is to discover the other. That is why good theology and good psychology work together so well. You have touched upon the soul, the unshakable reality of my true self, where I and the Father are one. John 10:30. The second half of life is about learning to recognize, honor, and love this voice and this indwelling presence, which feels like your own voice too. All love is now one. Let us take this moment to connect with transcendent God and also our deepest me, with eyes closed and hands on heart. Rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Carl Jung again writes, as far as we can discern, the sole purpose of human existence is to kindle a light in the darkness of mere being. And he also writes, that is the meaning of divine service, of the service which man can render to God, that light may emerge from the darkness, that the Creator may become conscious of his creation, and man conscious of himself. Edward Edinger writes, our whole unconsciousness is in an uproar from the God who wants to know and to be known. End quote. To love is to be conscious, and to be fully conscious would mean you are capable of loving. Sin always proceeds from lack of consciousness. I don't think most people are sinners, Most people are just not aware and not fully living in their own present moment. When Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, they don't know what they are doing," in Luke 23:34, he was absolutely right. Most people are on cruise control, and most of their reactions are habituated brain responses, not fully conscious choices. We may have moments when we are conscious of our real motivations and actual goals, but it takes years of practice, honesty, and humility to be consistently awake. Whenever you do not love, you are at that moment unconscious. If you consistently choose to defend your state of separateness, then spiritually speaking, you are unconscious, or in religious language, you are in sin. As has often been said, unless you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will think of it as fate. We avoid reality and the depth of our own souls because big truths initially disturb the comfortable and small self. For example, all countries are special, not just mine. All religions are good, not just mine. By definition, the small self wants to be both separate and superior. But in fact, we suffer because we are not truly whole. Our life is then ruled by the invisible, unknown parts of our psyche. Spiritual maturity is to become aware that we are not the persona, the mask we have been presenting to others. That is why saints are always humble and scoundrels are always arrogant. We must become intentional about recognizing and embracing our shadows. Religion's word for this is quite simply forgiveness, which is pivotal and central on the path of transformation. This can be painful as we realize that even when we thought we were loving, we often really weren't. And when we thought we were bad and sinful, we often weren't that either. Facing reality is also liberating because we recognize that our manufactured self-image is nothing substantial or lasting. It is just created out of our own mind, desire, and choice, and everyone else's opinions of us. The movement to second half of life wisdom requires serious shadow work and the emergence of healthy self-critical thinking, but without condemning or shaming that same self. That is the truly narrow gate and hard road that few follow. Matthew 7:14. There's no shortage of opportunities to discover your personal or corporate shadow. As Carl Jung says, everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of ourselves. End quote. Jung sees the forgiving, integrating of our shadow self as an essential task of every life. It is a political, social, and spiritual task to withdraw the projection of our shadow onto others. In the end, the face you turn toward yourself is the face you will turn toward the outer world. Let us take this moment to connect with God who wants to know and to be known. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Our practice this week is titled Shadow Work. Our unconscious reveals itself in many subtle ways. It takes a lifetime of intention and practice to notice our shadow and bring it into the light so that we are no longer controlled by it, but can integrate the shadow's energy and unique gifts into our conscious living. Let me offer the following ways to help us identify our shadow. Projection. When we have a strong positive or negative reaction to someone, that person is likely to be carrying an aspect of our shadow. Inner voice. During times of decision making or inner conflict, that other voice engaging us in an inner debate may be the shadow voicing its desires. To make good decisions, we need the views of this other. Bad choices or errors in judgment are often the result of not listening to the shadow. Freudian slips. When we say one thing and we mean to say another, this may reveal a hidden hurt or anger, some feeling that the shadow has carried for us until it found an opportunity to express it. Humor. If we examine what we say in humor, as well as what evokes our laughter, we can often detect our shadow. Dreams. Observing our dreams closely, we will see our shadow played out nightly and learn much about our unspoken motives, hidden faults and failures, unacknowledged virtues and vices, and underdeveloped or unrealized potential. I hope you'll take every opportunity to befriend your unconscious, for as other Jungian writers say, the individual who can manage not to be psychologically infectious, that is, free of the unconscious necessity to project all of his interior dark qualities onto others or onto ideologies and causes, is the individual on whom the ultimate peace of the world rests. Thank you for being with me. May you find your way in the depths of your shadow and making the unconscious conscious. Blessings to all.